You're listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a production of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Heartland Politics, where we explore politics here in the Midwest Heartland. This show is aired and distributed by WVIK Public Radio, the flagship national public radio station in the Quad City region of eastern Iowa and northwestern Illinois. I'm your host, Robin Johnson, and today we're going to look back at what happened in this election. There's still a lot going on at the national level that has not been decided as we air this broadcast. It may not be decided for a couple more days, but pretty much I think everything's in Iowa, and that's where we're going to start our election analysis here on WVIK on this show over the next week or two, to kind of piece together what happened and why. And here to do that with me today is Aaron Murphy, who's the Des Moines Bureau Chief of Lee Enterprises. He's been a guest of my show several times, and he's going to break down all the results and explain it to you so you understand what this means going forward. Aaron, thanks for being my guest today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Always glad to be here.
Yeah, I'm glad you could be in Pennsylvania or Arizona where you'd still be ODing on coffee and following this for God knows how long. But Iowa's got a fairly efficient system, it seems like, where the results are known and things proceed fairly efficiently. But we're all aware what happened at the top. Was this a surprise? Not perhaps the outcome as much as the margin, or what was the general reaction you got to the outcome of Trump winning Iowa again?
Yeah, I think you kind of got at it there. It's not necessarily a surprise that Trump won, but and not even necessarily the margin. He won by a little less than what he won here 4 years ago. Polls had showed a slightly closer race, but I think most folks expected the president to win this state and win it fairly comfortably, which he did. I think where more of the surprises came was more down the ballot, some maybe unexpected results at the congressional level, and then definitely at the state house level as well. I think the sense I get from Republicans, who had a very successful night, and I'm sure we'll get into that more, is this wasn't necessarily a shock to them. It was maybe the sense I get is this was kind of the best case scenario almost for them. Like, they believed this was possible, but maybe this was like the upper threshold of what they thought they could do, and they just happened to come pretty dang close to it.
Yeah, I wasn't surprised that Trump won. I guess the polls, and we will talk about polls later too, because that's a major issue floating around right now, especially in Iowa. But a lot of polls showed this race really close, and even Biden winning close. And it just, based on my knowledge of Iowa, that just didn't seem right. Trump winds up winning 53-45 approximately. 4 years ago, it was 51-42. So both candidates improved their position, but there wasn't as many other alternatives on the ballot either as there was a couple of years ago. How was overall turnout? There seemed to be a perception that turnout was really, really high in Iowa.
Yeah, it was a record turnout, and I'm going to pull up the Secretary of State. So I have the exact numbers here, and they announced yesterday almost 1.7 million Iowans voted, and that's more than 100,000 more than the previous record, which was set in 2012. So we had a record turnout, record absentee voting. You had more than 1 million early votes cast in this one. So out of that 1.7 million that voted, more than a million were early votes. So record turnout, yep.
Is there any way of knowing whether the record turnout is due to increased turnout from people on the Democratic side, the Republican side, or more likely these days, Aaron, to be honest, people who love Trump and people who hate Trump?
Yeah, and we're actually trying to get into the weeds on that right now and dig into those numbers and working with the Secretary of State's office. It's funny you ask that. We're literally this morning have been working with Secretary's State's office on that exact question. But I think you definitely hit on something. I mean, both parties increased their turnout. It wasn't just driven by one side or the other. So I think it was a combination of factors. You had, as you noted, very strong feelings on both sides at the presidential level, high interest just in general in that presidential race, and then a competitive U.S. Senate race in the state as well, some very competitive congressional races, and then even all the way down to the state house level where the parties were fighting over control of the Iowa House, one of the chambers, and that got very competitive. So I think it was this perfect storm of all these factors is what kind of all added up to producing a record turnout. And then you had the pandemic on top of it, just the cherry on top, which convinced more people to vote early. And that probably helped a little bit, too, because, you know, instead of waiting until election day and then deciding whether or not to vote, people cast a put a ballot in the mail and they're done. So all those factors, I think, added up to what we saw as far as turnout.
It's really quite remarkable record turnout in a state during a time of a pandemic, which I think we tend to already forgotten about that. But it is remarkable that the American people and Iowans in particular came out and voted to the degree they did in these difficult difficult times.
It's kind of counter to what we might have thought. You know, you think, oh, it's a pandemic, voting turnout is going to be way down. But the exact opposite has happened, and elections, not just the campaigns, the elections officials have pushed early voting, too. And I think voters have realized how convenient and easy that is, that process is, and they trust the system. And so a lot of people chose that route, which actually wound up helping to drive up turnout instead of the pandemic causing it to go down.
In other states, we had reports of problems on Election Day. I didn't hear of any. Did you hear of any problems as far as, protests, intimidation, or just problems processing votes? It seemed like Iowa went fairly smoothly.
Yep, that's what I've heard, too. I haven't heard of any major problems. Certainly nothing like the things that you described a lot of people were worried about. None of that happened. Iowa nice, I guess, maybe continues to be a thing. The only small problem I heard about was a funny anecdote that one of my colleagues at Iowa Public Radio reported that one of the voting machines got bogged down because of too much hand sanitizer had seeped into it, and so they had to clean it out and get it running again. Just kind of a minor hiccup, but I thought if that's not a story for 2020, hand sanitizer bogging down an election voting machine, I don't know what is.
Who would have thunk? I looked at the maps in preparation for our interview. There's a great site for our listeners called Dave Leap, LEIP, that has all kinds of election data. And I looked at the maps back when Obama won. And Obama won a lot of counties, of course, the more populous counties, Polk and Johnson and Blackhawk. But along the river here, these river counties in eastern Iowa. And then when I look when Trump won in 16 and this time, those counties are all shaded for Trump. And the Democrats only win about half a dozen counties. It seems like the consolidation of the vote over here, with the counties tend to be more blue collars, complete under Trump.
That's exactly right. It's down to both Hillary Clinton and Joe Biden only won six counties, Polk and Ames, Blackhawk, Lynn, Johnson, and Scott. So the counties with the biggest metropolitan areas. And then even Teresa Greenfield only added two more. She also won Theragordo County and one in Jefferson County in southeast Iowa. So that is a problem facing Democrats in these statewide races moving forward, is their concentration of vote shares is very much shrinking. As I noted out on Twitter in the aftermath of all this with Joni Ernst's victory, Democrats now have not won a statewide top of the ticket race. And by that, I mean either for U.S. Senator or governor since 2008. Tom Harkin's last victory was the last time Democrats have won one of those big statewide races. If you throw in the presidential races, they did go for Obama in his reelection in 2012. That would be the exception to that. But in Iowa, Iowa Democrats have had a real issue in these statewide races, and that continued here. And I think that's part of that issue, is that consolidation of all these votes, and they're just not winning enough votes in the other areas of the state. And they don't even necessarily have to win a ton more counties. They don't have to win as many counties as Obama did, as you noted, in 2008 and 2012. But they got to at least kind of chip into those margins and pick off some of those counties. Mm-hmm. Dubuque County, for example, yeah. I know is one that's talked about that has gone the other way. It used to be a Democratic county, and in the last few elections has not been. So there's definitely work to be done for Democrats if they hope to win one of these races again. And they've got two more in 2 years. They've got a Senate and a gubernatorial race in 2022. So they got to figure this thing out pretty quickly.
The focus from 4 years ago has been on Democrats doing better in rural areas. And, you know, yep. I kind of felt like a lab rat where people were coming in from the coasts and talking to us like we were aliens. I mean, how did your states go for Trump? But, I mean, there is a complete disconnect between, I still think, the National Democratic Party and what's going on in rural areas. And Iowa here, again, is a perfect laboratory for it. You look at... we'll shift to the Senate race here, but Ernst won 52-45. That's almost the exact same percentages as what Trump beat Biden by. People aren't switching their votes on these races like they used to. And right. if that advantage is built in rural areas for Republicans, it's a bleak future for Democrats.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that gets to another issue that Democrats face in the state, which is just the simple numbers and demographics and voting trends. If this state might be starting to trend a little more Republican, it's Iowa's, and most political people will tell you, and proudly from both sides, that they feel Iowa's a purple state and has been for a long time. And there's certainly, up until recent years, there's been a lot of evidence to support that. But it makes you wonder if we are starting to see a shift in Iowa here. 2018. Kind of pumped the brakes on that when you had Democrats do so well at the congressional level, and they came out of that with three of the four U.S. House seats with wins in the first and third district. But now they just lost two seats back. They lost the first and the second. So it's back to Republicans owning three of the four U.S. House seats, and obviously still have both U.S. Senate seats. So I think there are signs, and I still need another cycle or two, and maybe, especially depending if how things go in the presidential race, if Joe Biden does hold on, it may be informative too to see what the post Donald Trump Republican Party looks like too, and what that looks like in Iowa. And so we may still need a few more cycles probably to really make a call on whether Iowa's becoming a red state. But there certainly are, trends and signals out there that it's heading in that direction.
Absolutely. It will be interesting when Trump's not on the ballot if the right. same level of intensity and turnout is there. And with 18 as kind of our only guide, we'll see.
Yep, that's exactly right. And that's a good, like we said, and it's an important point to make again, that turnout was up for both parties. Mm-hmm. Joe Biden got 100,000 more votes in Iowa than Hillary Clinton did. 16% increase. Democrats turned out more, too. It's just that the enthusiasm was matched on the Republican side.
You're listening to the Heartland Politics podcast here on WVIK Public Radio in the Quad Cities. This is your host, Robin Johnson, and my guest today is the Des Moines Bureau Chief for Lee Enterprises, Aaron Murphy, who's a friend and has been a regular guest on this show from its inception. We're looking back at the election results in Iowa and trying to figure out what they mean. And we've covered the presidential race and kind of the two-party landscape fairly well. Let's take a deeper dive into the Senate race. Here again, the polls, and we'll get to that in a little bit, but the polls showed this really tight. Ernst wound up winning, as I mentioned, 52-45. Did you get a sense that there was momentum in this race at any time? Did Ernst pull away at the end, or was just kind of set in stone based on the votes at the top of the ticket?
Yeah, that's such a great question, and you kind of touched on everything that I would say in my answer. You're absolutely right. That's all right. I'll just add a little more detail to it. So you're absolutely right. I think there's no doubt in the votes have showed that, as you said, that people are just voting for the party a lot right now. And Joni Ernst ran very close to Donald Trump. Teresa Greenfield ran very close to Joe Biden. It was hard to see a lot of Trump Greenfield or Biden Ernst voters. That was just hard to envision enough of those anyways to make a difference in this Senate race. The momentum is such an interesting question because this was such a unique year with the pandemic, and you didn't have the normal campaign events that reporters like me and my colleagues rely on to gauge that kind of thing, where you can get out and a lot of voters there, and you can talk to people afterwards and get their sense for how they're feeling. And that's how we keep our ears to the tracks in most years. And we just didn't have that, especially on the Democratic side until very late. Teresa Greenfield didn't do a lot of in-person events, a lot of virtual events. And even when she did, she kept them very small. Now, in fairness to Greenfield, the campaign believed they were doing that for public health reasons and not wanting to hold events that would help spread the coronavirus that we're still dealing with here. But that was a decision, and the Republicans were a little more open to hold it. But again, for the most part, other than the presidential events, you know, Joni Ernst didn't hold huge campaign rallies either. But she did do a lot more in-person campaigning and in-person events. So, but again, even those were small. So it was really tough to get a sense of where the momentum was, and as you noted, the polling seemed to show a close race. That was entirely believable based on the kind of the way things felt nationally. I tell you that the one poll that Ann Selzer Iowa poll that came out at the end, and this has happened before. She mm-hmm. comes out with a poll that's a little different than everybody else, and then the debate is, oh, is that an outlier, or should we believe her again? And by gosh, she nailed it again. It got almost to the point where it makes you wonder why we even bother reporting on other polls on Iowa races in the future, because she was the one that had it again.
Just to give context, Aaron, to what Aaron's saying, the Des Moines Register poll came out the weekend before the election and showed, contrary to all the other polls, that Trump was going to have a very comfortable win. I think it was a 7-point difference. Ernst had about a five-point lead. And more controversial was her picks on the congressional races, where she showed Finkenauer, the incumbent Democrat in Northeast Iowa, behind. And we're both on Twitter, which is good and bad. But Saturday night was just filled with negative, nasty comments towards Selzer and how wrong she was. Well, she was right. Whatever she does modeling, and I'll tell you, let's talk a couple things here before we get more into those House races. But with polling, I was just listening this morning. There's a lot of criticism about pollsters and polling because it's been so far off these last two elections. They seem to be missing a lot of the Trump voters specifically, and whether it's because Trump voters don't want to listen or what, but have you heard anything about this criticism and soul-searching now on both sides on how off the pollsters are, except Ann?
I have, and I don't know what the bottom line or the easy fix is. I will say this one thing, and I'm also going to put in the pitch, so I hope everyone's listening to this, and I hope you finish all the way to the end. But when you're done with this, and definitely listen to Rob and I finish here, but when you're done with this, set your DVR and watch Iowa Press on Iowa Public Television, Iowa PBS over the weekend, because Ann Selzer is going to be the guest. And I know they will ask her a lot of these questions, and I can't wait to hear her answers too. But what I know, if I have this right from what she's talked about in the past, one thing that she does a little differently is a lot of polls will, wait and adjust their results for the voter makeup of the area they're polling. So they get a bunch of results from Iowa, and then they'll try to make sure that their sample includes the same share of voter, partisan voter numbers that Iowa does. So a pollster comes into Iowa, gets a bunch of numbers, and they'll report. They want to make sure that their numbers have 33% Republicans, 32% Democrats, and 35% no party. I'm just throwing out numbers, whatever they happen to be at that time. I don't believe that Ann Selzer does that. And I think that may be one of the key areas where, instead of trying to predict what the electorate will look like based on the past, she just, her polling output just takes the results essentially for what they are. And I think maybe that's one of the key areas and one of the differences, and maybe why she's had some success, that she's not trying to make any predictions about turnout. She's just taking people at their word that they managed to get on the phone, and that if they get enough people, that sample size is good enough to be representative of the state. But regardless of whether that's the big fix or not, there's, and especially at the state level, these polls, were off again for a second straight presidential election. Even in the states where Joe Biden's winning, like, he's going to eke out a win in Wisconsin by a half a point, but one poll had him by up by 17. I mean, this there's definitely something going on that, and they knew this. That's what's more interesting and maybe concerning, is that this was widely known that 4 years ago did not go well for polling at the state level. And obviously they weren't able to fix it. So I don't know what the answer is, but clearly more analysis needs to be done.
One thing I noticed and was after the pandemic, all campaigns shut down, a lot of face-to-face campaigning. But I saw early summer in June, the Republicans, and Trump in particular, started door-to-door campaigning again with, of course, precautions, masks and all. And I thought right then, that's significant. They were going to focus on a lot of these battleground states and rural areas to gin the turnout up. The Democrats didn't until really later in September, and some efforts were being done. I just thought right then that could be a significant factor here. What's your take on people you've talked to, or your observations? Was that a mistake that the Democrats made that hurt them in this race?
I think you've nailed it. I think that's definitely the postmortem, especially, you know, maybe not at the way up at the top of the ticket. That probably didn't impact whether Donald Trump won Iowa or not, or even moved the margin a lot. And maybe even not Teresa Greenfield or Joni Ernst and Teresa Greenfield to a certain extent. But boy, the lower and lower you get, and especially at those state house races for sure, where Republicans did way better than Democrats came in hoping to flip the Iowa House, and it actually went the other way. I have little doubt that absolutely impacted a number of those races. I mean, we're talking about races that are decided by a couple hundred votes in some places. I think, you know, it's up, I guess, to the individual to decide whether Democrats were doing the appropriate thing or whether they were being overly cautious. I guess that's more of a personal opinion thing, but as far as campaign-wise, I don't think there's any doubt that Republicans gained a huge advantage in that. And look, I should say, you know, most door knocking, I think you could get, and I haven't asked a public health expert this yet, and I will, but I think you could get them to say that, I think they would say that you can do that safely. You knock on a door, you wear a face mask, you back up, and you're talking to someone from 6 to 10 feet away. They can still hear you. You're safe ways away. You're still outside, and they're inside. I think there were ways to do that safely. Democrats erred on the side of caution, and I think that definitely hurt them in a lot of races. And I am hearing that out there, too. That's just not my opinion. I'm hearing that, and I'm hearing that from both sides.
We're running a little short on time. We got about 3 minutes left here. Real quick, did any of the congressional races, I know one's still kind of open, the Miller Meeks race against Hart, which is out here. That's 50-50. But did any of those surprise you?
Again, I think it sticks with the overarching theme. I don't know that any were necessarily shocking. Look, the first and third are always going to be competitive, and they were. Ashley Hinson just happened to knock off Abby Finkenauer, the Democratic incumbent over there in the first. Maybe a little bit of a surprise, but certainly not a shock. It's a competitive district, and it's a district that's been swinging back and forth between Republicans and Democrats for a number of years now. So that, especially once we saw the turnout numbers at the top of the ticket, that was definitely going to have a coattail effect down ballot. And same thing in the second district. And who knows, as you know, that's super close and could actually end up going another way based on the official count and then a potential recount. But the fact that it was close or that even Marionette Miller-Meeks may have won that race for the Republicans, again, that's a district that, sure, Democrat Dave Loebsack held it for a long time, but it's also a district that went for Donald Trump 4 years ago and I believe did again this year. So that's not a shock either. And then again, same thing in the third district. You know, Cindy Acme and David Young, that was a close race 2 years ago. It just got a little closer this year. And Cindy Acme is the one Democrat who managed to hang on. So I wouldn't call any of those shocking. I don't know that I would have predicted to you that Republicans would flip two seats and come out with three out of the four again. But it's not shocking either.
We just got about a minute here. One of the biggest shocks was the fact that the Iowa Democrats thought they would pick up a majority in the House. They didn't. They actually lost seats. The Senate, I think, stayed about the same. In 60 seconds, what's the policy outcomes going to be for that with Republican unified control of state government in Iowa? What do you see them going for in the legislative session next year?
Yeah, I mean, that's the question. Now they have that trifecta for two more years. It's a little tough to say. In fact, I asked Pat Grassley that question already, and he, gave the coy answer. He's got to talk to his members, especially after an election. There's new members, so yeah. But also, in fairness, they've kind of ticked off a lot of the things that you would want to do with the party's majority over the previous 4 years. There's not a ton left. The governor is going to come back and bring her Invest in Iowa plan, which was the big, shift in mental, increasing the sales tax, but reducing local taxes, shifting mental health funding to the state, funding conservation programs. That big project she unveiled last year got taken out by the pandemic. She'll bring that back. I would expect to see some other tax cuts. And we may see another abortion bill. It's another issue that Iowa Republicans still feel like they haven't quite gotten as far as they want to, because many of the things they passed have been struck down by the courts. So that could be another one.
Well, it's been seems like a short ride from the Iowa caucuses earlier this year to now, but it's over, at least in Iowa for now, and done a great job reporting. I followed you, and I appreciate you coming on the show. Aaron Murphy's been our guest today. He's a Des Moines bureau chief for Lee Enterprises. You can see him on Iowa Press as well regularly. Aaron, thank you so much for being my guest today.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
Heartland Politics is a production of WVIK, Quad Cities NPR. If you enjoyed this conversation, you can hear more on the Heartland Politics podcast, available at WVIK.org, in the WVIK app, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.